Great. Right. Thank you. Well, welcome October 2017 Channel Masters to the first of your ongoing webinar series. This is Lisa Sabouret, and it's hard to believe it's already a month since we were all together in beautiful Huntington Beach and taking in those gorgeous views of the Pacific Ocean. But here we are. It's November, and we're really excited to have you all together with us today. The topic for these webinars, as you know, are really mostly defined by your input. And we're actually going through all of those post-session surveys that you filled out where you kind of wrote in what you'd like to talk about in these sessions going forward. And we're going through those now and putting together the calendar of topics for the months to come. But meanwhile, this partner profitability topic is one, you know, we touched on this in the kickoff workshop, and we certainly know it's crucial to your overall Channel Masters education. So we're really happy to share this with you today. Our presenter is Jeff Hine, and Jeff is one of our senior consultants here at IPED, whom you haven't had a chance to meet yet, but you'll be meeting him now, and you'll also be engaging with him throughout your year-long program. Jeff really plays a major role in all of our research projects and our consulting work here, so you're in great hands. I'm going to pass it to Jeff now, and he'll give you a little bit more information about his background, and then we'll go ahead and get started with the material. So thanks, Jeff. We can go ahead and hand it over to you.
All right. Thanks. So yeah, as Lisa mentioned, we're gonna deep dive into a subsegment of data on VAR profitability from a larger study that looked at profitability, you know, across all partners. A little bit of my background. I spent most of my career in the channel, and that heavily weighted towards being with partners. So I had the fortunate experience of joining a partner at employee number 10. Helping grow that company to about 200 and then for sale. So, you know, I've been the victim and the beneficiary of many a great or bad channel program, as the case may be. And in, you know, roles in the partner community, I've done everything from sit in front of CIOs and ask for the check as a commissioned salesperson, all the way up to running services businesses. So I have a lot of different perspectives on profitability myself, having gotten paid on profit and having run a business that contributed heavily to the profit of the overall partner as well as the individual rep. So, you know, feel free to ask any questions that might draw on my personal background and opinions as well, you know, beyond just the data. What we're going to cover today is really, you know, three things. Talk a little bit about kind of a strategic backdrop of thinking about profitability. We're going to dissect VAR profitability, including the expense side. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how you can apply all of this to your own value proposition. So the context first. Let me do this. So, you know, having a conversation about profitability with your partners often means understanding your relative position to them, whether you're a strategic partner, a tactical partner, or an opportunistic. So this was a little research that we did, you know, aside from profitability. I'm just showing kind of the makeup, you know, how many, you know, how partners viewed their different partnerships. And the numbers represent, you know, the average partner has 6 strategic, 5 tactical, 7 opportunistic, you know, where the strategic being the most meaningful to their overall business mix. So, you know, you can expect when you're talking to your partners, that when you're asking them questions about how they derive their profit and trying to, you know, peel back the onion, the answers that you get and their willingness to share is probably going to be somewhat of a function of, you know, where you fall, you know, in the spectrum. So it's just something to keep in mind. And, you know, again, this was different research and profitability. When we talked to partners about, you know, why they, for lack of a better term, discarded relationships, or perhaps why folks moved from being a strategic partner to more tactical or opportunistic, we got things like that, you know, the vendor was not addressing, you know, their business model directly. It was not a strategic fit. Or there were poor expectations between the investment they were making, or maybe it was unclear whether they could attach services to the product. You know, that was a big thing. Or just generally kind of an imbalance between the investments that they were making and coming up to speed and the projected gross margins. The net here, though, is that the top reasons they gave, they all tended to be about profit. They weren't, you know, the vendor had poor sales support, or it was an uncompetitive product, or, you know, program elements. It really got down, and it drove it home to us that, where they make their money is really the reason why you're either a strategic partner, a tactical, an opportunistic, or you've potentially been dropped. So it really all gets back to profit. Now, how we define profit and how we think about profit has really evolved over time. In the past, profit was pretty straightforward and easy. It was about gross margins. It was about getting new customers, adding on some services, keeping the lights on and making sure you could pay your employees and pay commissions, and everybody maybe got a bonus at the end of the year. That's evolved, and I would say it's really expanded. Those things are table stakes now. Now, the projected profitability for a partner now also has to do with value elements, right, and how they can project over value over time and increase profit. So it's things like, are they building real intellectual property that has uniqueness, gives them competitive advantage, and improves profit in the future? Are they investing in monthly recurring revenue businesses that are going to give them sort of steady stream profitability versus transactional-based kind of lumpy revenue and profit streams? And then, buried in that term valuable is clearly valuation, right? The types of things, throwing off cash to run the operation isn't necessarily just enough. Putting those profits into the things on the right-hand side that create value the conversation around valuation and exit strategies and where partners want to build businesses to perhaps get rolled up or just sold or to merge or to be in, unique positions like that. So it's just evolved, right, to include more things than just selling product, taking some cash, keeping the lights on, and generating profit in that way. Now, just to give you, again, kind of a backdrop, this data is across all of partners, but we just wanted to give you a little bit of background before we dive into the VAR-only data. So across all respondents, we asked primary business model. The number one primary business model was VAR at 35%. And then we'll talk about why in a couple slides, why we found that everybody was really a hybrid. In terms of 2016 revenue mix, the three top areas of revenue were on-premises hardware at 22%, and these are all tied, managed services at 22%, and project-based professional services at 22%. So as a whole, partners have really balanced, right? It's not just about selling product, it's about recurring revenue, and it's about services. So that's we feel that that's a really healthy mix, and those are really the three pillars that partners base their go-forward revenue on, and then ultimately their profitability. But what we found in the study, in reality, and I don't think this would come as necessarily a surprise to anyone, is that everyone was a hybrid. There weren't, with the exception of MSPs, who were probably the category where there were the most pure plays, I'm only an SMP, an MSP, everybody was a hybrid. So they had primarily a VAR business, but they were growing an MSP business. Or they're an MSP, and they did, in fact, realize, well, wait a minute, customers want to buy product from me. And then consultants sort of fell in that same boat as well. So it's just important that continuing to profile partners and looking at these business models, don't necessarily think of them just as pure play. Think of them as primary business models and secondary business models. And that, it represents some, I don't want to say maybe, it could be called challenges, but adjustments to make in your programs and how you're talking about profitability with your partner clients, because how you talk about the profitability of their VAR business is going to be, and success of their VAR business is going to be dramatically different of how you talk about the profitability and success of their MSP business, and you want to be included in both. So it's critical. So even though we're going to start talking data at the VAR level, it's important to understand that all of your VARs are hybrids, and they have different pieces of the business model, that they execute. I'm just going to stop for a second. Any questions on anything we've done so far? So I can take a talking break, and you can maybe clarify anything on slides. All right. I took a watershed break. So again, the last slide on sort of the macro. You know, respondents told us that they grew top line revenue by about 15% in 2016. And looking forward, some of the biggest growth impact areas were in this chart. And you can see that the top area they mentioned was managed services, with a projected growth of 36%, or, you know, 2x what they thought their cloud business was going to expand. And on-premises hardware, you know, falling just shortly behind that at 31%. And this is, you know, this is important to VARs as well, you know, and in particular because VARs told us that MSP business that you're going to see on the next slide is a bigger growing part of their revenue, and at a 36% growth rate is going to, you know, start to impact their businesses more and more as they go forward. So the revenue mix for VARs in general, you know, the headline, hardware resale, it still dominates revenues, right, as a mainstay. You know, on average, 65% of VAR revenues still come from product resale, and as much as 80%. Services continue to grow with an average of about 20% for VARs and a high of just short of 40%. So they're continuing to make those investments and increasing services. When you drill down into that services mix, professional services is still leading, you know, with an average of about 37%, in some cases a maximum of 90. That really starts to get more to the consultant SI model as well, though. And second, right behind professional services, are managed services. You know, with the VAR saying, you know, on average, 31% of their revenue is coming from managed services. So they're making significant investments and significant, you know, business transformational activities and moving to that recurring revenue model, even though professional services still leads and continues to be a place they invest. Now, important to understand kind of the mix of these managed services that they're investing in, and we'll do a little bit more of that in a slide or two. But they basically break down to managed services that are simply resold, managed services that are partner owned, and managed services that are partner managed only. And we'll start to dive into that in subsequent slides and give you a sense of what that really means in terms of profit and mix. So the gross margin ranges across the board for VARs, you know, it's a wide range of profit here on the left, but in general, just pure product margins, you know, on-premises hardware and software, you know, the average is about 15% margins for both, you know, with the scale up or down, you know, and software yielding a little bit more. What we actually, you know, what we believe is that software side of the equation is more than likely driven by the ability to bundle more services in with the software, and you know, as a generalization, less opportunity to bundle those into hardware. Not no opportunity, but less opportunity. There's more to do in terms of design and customization and deployment and maintenance from a services standpoint on the software side than there tends to be on the hardware side, though it's not exclusive. Dead in that services category, in the middle there, the highest average gross margins are from professional services at 31%, you know, and that mirrors roughly about their average margins in services as a whole. So I wanted to point out that cloud resale piece. You know, from the combination of the data and the interviews, you know, we saw about a 23% average gross margin there. From the interviews, that's heavily influenced by the bundling of professional services with that business. We didn't talk to any VARs who felt that, you know, cloud resale alone is a big profit opportunity. They're bundling other things with it, and it's boosting that opportunity. So I just wanted to clarify that. I didn't want anyone on the call to come away thinking that for VARs one of the bigger margin opportunities, you know, with that top extending up to 52%, was just purely resale of cloud services. It's because they're bundling other professional services with it that makes those packages quite lucrative. If we go to the right side of this chart, the MSP, here's how we start to see the differences in margin characteristics between just selling MSP services, MSP services where the VAR is managing them but not owning the assets, and MSP services where the VAR actually owns the assets. The resale here, obviously quite low. And, what's interesting to reflect against the numbers of cloud resale, we just believe that there's less of an opportunity to bundle in MSP services than there are in the cloud resale services, which is why the dramatic difference in the margins they're seeing, it really ends up just being a pass-through without as much opportunity to upsell. In the MSP managed category and the MSP owned category, average margins are about the same, 44% and 45% respectively. And I apologize that the scale of this came off. The scale of the MSP owned, the bottom runs just a little bit above that 38% respectively on the managed only, but it actually does run above the 55%. The thing about the MSP owned, right, is if the VAR is investing in the infrastructure themselves, they perhaps have some data center space, the scale of that can get really, really, really attractive. Once you invest in it, the more customers you have on that infrastructure, the scale, your scale goes up, and the margins go up, versus something that's a little more captive where the customer's owning the asset. So it's the reason why that business tends to scale higher. However, that business takes a lot of investment, right? It's one thing to build out a NOC and get space in either your facility or somewhere else to have a network operation center or a security operation center. It's another thing entirely to own a lot of gear and have to house that and have to manage that and have to depreciate those larger costs over time. So as a general breakout, and again, this, I just want to clarify, this data was across all of partners, but we can extrapolate it, as sort of a spotlight on VARs, it generally holds, that the mix of revenue of, in the managed services business, about 21% of the revenue is coming from resale, 61% of the revenue is coming from partner managed services, where customer owns the asset and partner manages it. Only about 18% of the revenue is where the service is delivered, where the partner, or the VAR in this case, owns a lot of the infrastructure. Again, there's potentially greater upside on the gross margins there, but there's still a ton of risk in owning more equipment versus owning less equipment. Any thoughts or questions on that before I dive into the next? So now we're just going to talk about categories of both revenue-producing products and the top profit-yielding products. So for 2016, the top revenue-producing products from a VAR perspective were client security software, and on the gross margin side of that equation, VARs told us that gross margins were generally increasing on those types of solutions. The second highest revenue-producing product is an accumulation of hardware at the lower end, mobile computing, notebooks, and PCs, but VARs noted that the margins on those products were definitely going down. Enterprise networking was next. Gross margin profile stayed about neutral. And then bringing up the top five is enterprise storage networking and mid-range servers. So clearly there continues to be a lot of activity in the security marketplace, no doubt, due to the high-profile hacking that we seem to see on a weekly, but certainly on a monthly basis. It's a place where VARs are investing time, they're building service capabilities, and they're certainly bundling those services to increase their gross margins. Just a couple points to make from the left. Storage is kind of back on this list from being off, I think, from the last time we did this data. We think mostly from things like flash technology and NAS storage driving those margins up and driving the opportunity up a little bit. And we also, though it's not on here, we also heard a lot of VARs saying that they were refocusing some of their efforts on server virtualization, largely driven by the increase of cloud and private cloud in general. So it wouldn't shock us if we see some of those things start to get higher on the list next time around, perhaps next year when we do the study again. Now, if we look at purely gross margin, the story adjusts a little bit. The previous slide, we had a mix of hardware and software products. Here we've got, the top three as really software driven. Business analytics being number one, that whole big data area, VAR is estimating that solutions in business analytics are yielding about 30% gross margins. Client security software, no surprise. We saw that on the previous slide as a revenue driver as well, at about 22% gross margins. And then collaboration software. If you remember from one of the second or third slides where we kind of did the spread of gross margins across the whole product and services set, you saw that software was a little bit higher in that range over hardware. And this, I think this proves that out and plays it out that VARs tend to be able to work in the software space at a higher margin rate. And we think it has a lot to do with the services that they're able to bundle with that improves the overall gross margins of those solutions. So one of the things to understand is that, everything about your program has some sort of impact on your partner's profit. It could be a revenue impact that increases your partner's profit. It could be a cost impact that decreases your partner's profit. So as we were venturing into the study, and we did a little bit of this before we even came up with the questions and what we wanted to ask in profitability, is we developed this kind of taxonomy, this sort of functional model of the VAR profitability drivers, right? So on the left-hand side, you've got things like revenue, product gross margin, service attach, the things that can be impacted to increase margins and profitability. On the bottom, SG&A, selling, general, administrative expenses, the things that tend to decrease. And we've got there'll be a different version of this on the next slide, and we can dive into that. But what we want people to think about is, on the revenue side, what are the things that make up revenue increases? Well, of course, they're just growth rate. You're selling more. It's competitive win ratio, right? So the more deals that the VAR participates in that they end up winning, that ends up obviously impacting growth rate. Average deal size is obviously critical to increasing revenue. And financing, right? Whether they can get the capital and the money that they need to grow their business, and turn that business over is absolutely important. If you think about those, you think about things like services attach rate, what are the services dollars and the product dollars? What are their hourly billing rates? Each one of these individual categories has an element of how does your program and what you're doing with partner support affect that, right? So, for instance, in that service attach rate, hourly billing, right, thinking about how you can actually help your partners improve their hourly billing rates by mentoring programs, by better training, by maintaining those hourly billing rates in the market themselves, by helping them on the services gross margin side with utilization, perhaps by recommending them into new customers or having them as a subcontractor. There are opportunities for you to impact these things in a positive way at every step of the game if you sort of think about your program and you think about how you're dealing with partners. So the top line message here is that partner profitability relative to you and your programs, it's not just about how much they pay for their product. But I'm sorry, how much they pay for your product to resell it. It's about a whole host of other things, including those selling and general administration expenses on the bottom, like shorter sales cycles. Can you provide them tools that shorten sales cycles and therefore reduce costs? Can you provide them lower cost training so their training and certification costs go down and that ends up being delivered to the bottom line? So we hope that this concept helps you think about looking at your programs and your partner interactions very holistically and seeing how every single thing you do can potentially impact the partner's profit. For VARs, I'm not going to read through this. There's a lot of these, and I think you're going to get these slides. But profitability driver trends, certainly in the revenue side, VAR revenue volumes are going up, but their margins are going down overall. And that's definitely a challenge to continue to fund growth. From what we saw in the interviews and some of the data, we felt like this was far more of a cost pressure than a lack of being able to get revenue, right? Revenue volumes are up, but managing their businesses, balancing the cost that they need to be in your program, managing staff costs, which we'll talk about, are getting more and more challenging. So to the extent that you can help impact those, VARs would welcome and love the help. There's certainly continued pressure on margins for volume hardware. That's something that's just going to happen. From our perspective, that's a bit more of a transformation issue necessarily than a vendor program issue, but it could be a vendor program issue. Service attach, one of the trends that we saw is, and this is a positive trend, more and more VARs are having services that are not attached to products. They're standalone, whether they're assessments, they're consulting, they're optimization. So they're yielding profit in and around products, but aren't necessarily always having to be tied to a product sale. So they're yielding profits in that way. And then from more accurately, services attach rate, we're seeing the trend continue that in order to mitigate margin pressure on volume products, they're having to always bundle services with them. And that that even carries over to cloud resale, right? VARs have recognized there's not a ton of money in cloud resale, but if we bundle some services in, there's actually some really good margin. And then in this pure cost area, this SG&A, anything that we can do as vendors to help them manage service bench utilization is absolutely critical, from a getting the right people, from having perhaps contracts in place with them that allow them to be a subcontractor to you, having programs in place that facilitate them partnering with VARs who maybe don't have the service capabilities and delivering services for them. And then, of course, there's this idea of vendor IP and IP sharing. Critical to services across the board, it's probably more critical to the consulting SI model, but as the professional services component of the VAR model becomes bigger, to the extent that they can become more efficient and better about delivering services, it lowers and streamlines their cost. That means profit. So that is absolutely a legitimate way to talk to your partner in terms of a value proposition, which we'll get into again in some more detail a little later. Just going to take a stop for any questions or thoughts on this.
Yeah, can you go back to the two slides back? I'm just kind of curious as to how you would measure
this one?
Competitive win rate. Yeah, competitive win rate per partner.
How
competitive win rate per partner. Yeah. What's your measure on that?
Well, what's our measure? We did not dive into data, right? So this, it was a little intuitive. How would I measure it? I just built into, you would measure it by asking a partner, can you tell me the number of formal proposals that you deliver per quarter? A formal proposal, defined as something that actually has pricing, ready for signature, something from Substance. And then are they keeping track of their wins? Right. So, it's not incredibly scientific. It's a little more about just thinking that any place where you can make a a partner more competitive. That might mean a sales tool that allows them to size a particular solution better. It could mean a tool that you provide them that lets them diagnose a problem more quickly and more thoroughly. So things like that that you can improve their odds of winning are going to obviously increase their revenue and increase their profit. So yeah, we didn't dive into the data side or apply a lot of science to that. Is that fair? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, perfect.
Okay. So further on these levers, you know, we went to the partners and we asked them specifically, you know, what are most important to you? You know, on the revenue side and the decrease in cost side. So the things that stood out, you know, again, were heavily about profit. You know, 34% were asking for ways to earn higher discounts on resale. Of course, it's not shocking, but not surprising. 75% were asking for more lucrative front-end incentives for deal registration. Again, that's not surprising, but it's something that decreased their cost of goods sold, right? So gives them extra profit. It's a cost side of the equation. Some of the other things that stood out, 56% asked to make training and certification more affordable. It's a big cost, and you're going to see in a slide in a little bit just, you know, how much staff costs are really beginning to impact the equation for them. And fees were really high too. You know, 45% said, you know, reduction and elimination of channel and alliance program fees would really make a difference in their overall product picture. But, you know, this gives you a sense here, you know, I'm not sure who asked the question, but to the question you just asked, stronger sales tools make you more competitive. You win more deals. You know, 23% said, you know, stronger sales tools are definitely part of the profit equation, and we'd love to continue to get better sales tools. Jumping back to SG&A, one thing that all partners told us, again, this wasn't necessarily VAR specifically, but all partners told us, and again, getting back to this competitive and sales tools issue, that longer sales cycles, 43% of them said longer sales cycles have definitely had an impact on their selling, had the most impact on their selling cost in 2016. You know, they're facing somewhat unpredictable customer demand, which is expanding sales cycles. But then very specifically, they said that the fact that they're having to talk to different decision makers, specifically on the line of business area, people they haven't necessarily talked to in the past, they don't quite understand the process. They may not necessarily always have the skills to talk at that level, perhaps with vertical expertise or with business operational expertise in solutions like the Internet of Things, you know, IoT, things like that. Sales cycles are increasing. So where you can provide help there, they're definitely looking for it. On the raw costs, top four major SG&A expense items that increased from 2015 to 2016, staff is number one, staff is number two, where to put the staff, business office is number three, and staff is number four. So clearly it's people costs are driving big costs and eating into profitability for partners. And that's really not, there really shouldn't be a surprise, right? Everyone's trying to move to a business model where they're doing more services. Well, services are people. You know, yes, the scalability of an MSP business in terms of the people piece is much greater than the scalability of a you know, a consulting and a project-based PS business, because it's literally one in, one out. You know, if you can't find the right person to do the project, then you can't do the project. But in both cases, finding, retaining, courting, paying, competing for staff is really putting cost pressure on them. On your partners. So shifting sort of out, we asked partners, you know, if they felt their channel account managers really understood, you know, their business and how they made money. And the answers came back, you know, pretty loud and clear. They didn't feel that their cans did. And this is a big disconnect, right? You know, the first step to having that conversation and the first step to understanding how you can improve things for your partner is really getting how they make money, right? It's the beginning of the conversation. So 15% of partners, only 15% of partners said that they felt that their cans fully understood the elements of their business in terms of profit and cost. 29% said they understood most of it, but then 21% say it's really limited to just understanding the transactional gross margin, right? So the CAM understood the profit involved in just the resale of the product they cared about most, but they really didn't get anything else in the business. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily a rosy picture of the sort of the synergy and the link of how a vendor's programs and how they operate really impact a partner's business model. I saw this in different ways. I did a bunch of the partner interviews in a CAM study that we recently did. I don't know if you guys saw that at the last Channel Masters. I think you may have. But I did a lot of those partner interviews, and one of the things that came up in a qualitative way, of course, I didn't have data because they were interviews, but we continually came back to this idea that my vendors, my CAMs, just do not understand my business. And in some ways, it was strategic, right? Because sometimes the CAM gets pushed down to being just the sales guy or gal, and they're involved in transactions, so they have difficulty developing the executive-level relationships within the solution providers to really even understand where the business is going. But it also even came out in tactical ways of, you know, complaints and stories about how, you know, I have these mass communications from my vendors, and I even have customized communications coming from my channel account managers, you know, saying, hey, you need to participate in this promotion or this program or this competitive upgrade or this thing we have in this quarter, and it being totally not relevant, right? Like a storage program going out to a network bar. Know, or security going out to someone, you know, in database. So this disconnect is really critical. You know, and it gets back to one of the first slides around, are you a strategic vendor, are you a tactical vendor, or are you an opportunistic vendor? Having more of these conversations and using, you know, that taxonomy, like three or four slides back around dissecting your program and saying, you know, how can I understand and educate my CAM how our program impacts each of these different things, and then building knowledge about how your partner actually makes their money is going to be really critical to success moving forward. So just as sort of a beginning about a wrap up, you know, what are the takeaways? So the takeaways of our profitability are the following. Reselling enables growth. It isn't necessarily the profit in and of itself, but their ability to resell products and then bundle managed services and professional services around them, that's really what drives profit for VARs. VARs certainly need to improve and will continue to be more profitable to the extent that they develop vertical specialties and continue to build these monthly recurring revenue businesses. Software platforms are key. There's more money in it for them when they can bundle profitable services around software than hardware. And from a program standpoint, anywhere where there's complexity in your program, even if it's, you know, taking time to do things, that equals cost. You know, another thing that we talk about in the CAM study is this idea of all the different things the CAM does, you know, program administration, day-to-day activities, to the extent that things can be automated and self-served for the partner, not only does it buy back CAM productivity, but it lowers costs for the partner because they're spending less time getting access and finding people and, you know, finding the information about your program that they need, and more time selling. So wrapping this up, you know, how does this matter to your value proposition? I touched on all of this through the presentation, but, you know, just to summarize, it's important to understand how your partner makes their money and what kind of hybrid business they are, right? Are they a little bit VAR, a little bit MSP, understand the distance, the differences, and understand how you can play in both sides of those, both sides of their business to drive profit. Understanding the complete channel economic picture for your products, including your program, is critical. Referring back to that that functional model, dissect that a little and see where you might be adding to partner costs and where you can help help take that out. And manage your value proposition to profitability, right? Because that's what they care about most. It's how their salespeople get paid. It's how they pay. It's how they pay themselves. Top line growth is great, but top line growth without profit, it, you know, I don't want to say it's meaningless to them, but it's less meaningful. And continue to evolve your partner and managers, your TAMs, in terms of awareness and knowledge around how your partners make the profit. It's going to make all the difference, you know, and it could very well be the difference from, you know, moving from a tactical partner to a more strategic partner who gets a bigger piece of the pie, or preventing yourself from moving down the spectrum from being a strategic partner to just opportunistic, because you there's really no synergy in understanding how your products, how your solutions, and how your program are impacting impacting partner profitability. Last wrap up. So I don't know how many of you saw this webinar from, oh gosh, I guess, I don't know, Lisa, you might remember from about, I think about 90 days ago, maybe even more, we did a summary of all the information. We're starting our deep dives now. This was the, I believe this was the first one. I don't think we've done consultant SI yet. This was the deep dive into the VAR information. We're deep diving into the MSP profitability information on December 1st. So if that's critical to you, mark your calendars, you know, and understand that we've kind of we've developed this profit model for all three business models, you know, and a companion, the vendor support needs, you know, what each particular business model is asking for specifically from their vendor in terms of support needs to drive profitability. So I encourage you all to join those as well. That's it. I will throw it back to Lisa and ask for any wrap-up questions to tie this off.
Any other questions from the group?
Yeah, just one more data question. Sorry, you have a data nerd. You know that question going back to the CAMs. I'm just kind of curious: is do you ever ask the partners, you know, hey, you know, are you hitting your quarterly goals, you know, with your vendors? You know, and if the question is yes, and then they come back and say that, you know, oh well, but you know, but they don't understand our business. I'm just kind of curious as if you could if you've ever thought about tying that data together, because that would be very interesting to me. Because at that point, it would seem that my relationship with my partner is aligned, you know, but maybe there's something else that I am missing, you know.
So that's a really interesting question. And to my knowledge, no, but I'm going to put that as a note, you know, to talk to Beth. I'm sure you guys probably know Beth. She constructs a lot of these things. But here's what I'll say about that. So, you know, the CAM space is such a tough space in general. And I don't know if anyone on the call went to any of our road shows, but we did a series of road shows over the past, I don't know, month or so where we dove into the CAM data. I did the Boston and New York ones, if there was anyone there. But, you know, the interesting thing was that, you know, there's this push-pull, both with on the vendor side and the partner side with the CAM, right? We're all measured on quarterly revenue sales goals, right? But the future vendor vision for what they want the CAM to do is much more strategic. It's business planning. It's working with partners to develop complete solutions that include all of the products and services that vendor might offer, you know, but then also be somewhat vendor of not agnostic with the partner and help them build, you know, a complete portfolio of solutions across the board that grows their business.
Right.
So it's, you know, I can tell you that the partners were absolutely most happy with the CAMs who were involved in the very tactical day-to-day deal support, transaction support, and playing the resource manager of, you know, listen, turn over the stones and find me the resources that I need to build my business. And it, from the perspective of the partner, that building the business almost always was help me close the deal. right, and help me close a deal this quarter. So there probably was a lot of synergy, I'm certain, between the partners who were very happy with their can, and they were making the number. But what was ignored from the vendor perspective was the strategic element, and what was talked about from the partner perspective was they didn't even necessarily understand the strategic element, right? They don't understand the value of it. What I can also say is that aside from revenue, you could really tell when a partner loved their CAM, and it didn't necessarily have to do with revenue. It almost always had to do with responsiveness. It was just someone who knew their own organization inside out, was there for more than 6 months, right? Because CAM turnover was a real problem, and could get to the right resources quickly to impact a deal. You know, that's what they really, you know, came across and said was success for them.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks.
All right.
All right. Well, I guess if there aren't any other questions, then thank you so much, Jeff, for taking all of us through the material. In terms of next steps, I will be pushing out an email to all of you with the link to the recording of today's discussion, and also just a recap of how to access your class portal. In another day or two, the folks that manage the portal for us will load the presentation itself, the recording, and you'll have all of that available to refer back to at your convenience. I'll also be sending out an invitation for the webinar Jeff mentioned, which is the MSP cut of this data, and I'll be sending that out today. And again, as you know, that's going to take place on December 1st. It will also be recorded. If you can't make it live or you want to go back to it, that'll also be included with your class materials. So unless anyone has any other questions, that's all we had for today. Thank you so much again for joining us, and we appreciate your participation. We look forward to talking with you again real soon.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.